We are back at Channel 9 Live, live at TechEd 2013. I'm Rick Claus, and we're down here at the Taste of TechEd right now, and I'm joined by my friend Jose Barreto from the Storage Group, and we're going to talk about storage.
Yes, we will.
Could you, for those that don't know, Jose, can you introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. So my name is Jose Barreto. I'm a principal program manager with the file server and clustering team. And in 2012, I worked a lot with the SMB file protocol, the Hyper-V over SMB scenario.
Yep.
And we're doing more of that in 2012 R2. And now I have a new feature I'm working on, which is the shared virtual disk, which we'll have a talk to.
So nice.
Those are the main things I'm cooking.
So the funny thing is I had Ben Armstrong on earlier this week talking about Hyper-V and what's doing Hyper-V and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I swear to you, he spent half of his time talking about storage. And so are you going to do the same thing and take half of your time talking about virtualization while we're up here?
Like,
is that kind of a crossover?
Yeah, we meet on a regular basis now, and a lot of our features are done together. So like the live migration work that he's doing is now working over SMB. So we're essentially working together in many of these things. So I did a demo of live migration.
In your storage session?
In my storage session. Not storage live migration, just regular live migration.
Yep.
So yeah, that's happening a lot now.
Oh, wow. Wow, crazy stuff. It's a great time. And like one of the what I would call one of the pillar demos that they did during the keynote session is one that basically had the jaw-dropping moment and just the realization of people about this. And a lot of them didn't believe it. Was the fact that you could very simply go through with storage spaces in 2012 R2, select the disk that was there, and then it would detect somehow that there was different caliber or speeds of disks, and then it would allow you the option of going off and do tiering. Now, I got to ask, is that for real? Is it that easy to do with R2 for the bits that we have?
What we're doing right now, right, there's something very interesting going on that we will now detect that there's SSDs and there are HDDs.
Right.
So in the past, when you create a space, you say, I want to create a space, and I want to take it from this pool of disks, and I want this much space.
Right.
Now you have extra options. You say, I want this much from the HDD side, this much from the SSD side. And you actually don't have to say anything else. It will basically go there and look at how you're using it. It will track heat, right?
Yep.
And the hot stuff goes to the SSD side. The cold stuff goes to the HDD side. So it's that straightforward. Now, it won't happen in a second,
right?
You have to train
it,
if you will, right? You have
to,
you keep working with it and all that, and over time, you see that it will learn what you're going to need, and it will put it in the right place. You can also pin files.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Which, I would. If you know exactly what you want to do,
if you think you can outsmart the system, this one is going to be used more. Let's pin that one.
There's a typical scenario, right? The VDI stuff, when you know you have like the base VHD.
Yeah.
That one, you can kind of, if you're doing pooled VMs, you can guess that one. But for the most part, you will just let the system do it. Because when you pin, you're basically using that space on the SSD.
Right.
It will never take it off of
it. So that chunk of 32 gigs, whatever it happens to be, is going to be pinned and used and can't be dynamically used by everybody.
The other thing people don't know is that you can pin on the HDD side too.
Oh.
So if there's stuff that you don't care for that performance, you can just say, I will pin it to the HDD side.
Okay.
So you can do that too.
So maybe they're going to be pinning like the ISO files of the next preview release because it's going to be so anticipated, people are going to want to try to use it, but just pin that to the HDD side to keep the SSDs that are there.
Yeah.
Now actually, from an IT implementer perspective, just out of curiosity, like, how do they determine that they know? Because actually, this was a question that came up on Twitter during the during the keynote. How do people? How does the system know it's a fast SSD drive? Is there like a? Does it actually say this is a 15,000 RPM disk, or is that part of the metadata of the object or something, or what?
The way you look it up is the rotational speed of the drive.
Oh, it's actually listed as a characteristic of the drive.
Yeah, the physical disk has a property that says rotational speed, and for SSDs, it's zero.
Okay. And so, currently, does it only make the separation when you have that drastic of a difference between SSD and 15,000 RPM?
Yeah, no. For this one, we tried to make it as straightforward as possible.
Simple, yes.
So SSDs goes here, HDD goes there.
Okay.
And they detect which one is which. You don't have to do anything. Now, you can get fancy. Let's say, for instance, if you have 15K disks, 10K disks, and some SSDs, you can actually create a pool where you say, this pool has some of these what we call performance HDDs, right, in some SSDs, and this other pool has some capacity HDDs and some SSDs. And you can, the two-tier thing is on the pool, right? Mm-hmm. So you can create multiple pools, and with those multiple pools, you essentially have even more flexibility. So you can play with it, you can tweak mm-hmm. it further, but the goal is to make it simple.
Okay. Now, we are live again on the live stream, and so I wanted to do a quick little shout out first to our viewers in Trinidad and Tobago. Is it Tobago or Tobago? Because I've never been there, so it's Tobago. Welcome. I'm hoping you're enjoying the show so far, and you're enjoying your day so far. I hope the weather's nice. It's pretty humid here in New Orleans. But if you do have any questions, you are more than welcome to go ahead on the Channel 9 site, channel9@msdn.com, and there's a form there. You can fill out your questions and ask Jose or myself any kind of questions that we have. We've got about 20-odd minutes here before we have to switch back to A Taste of Tech Ed. Now, I got another question here for you for the optimization process. Someone was, when they shuffle stuff back and forth, is it a scheduled thing? Is it dynamic that it just happens on the fly? Is it like a defrag routine to run a certain time of day or what?
We're tracking heat all the time. The idea, spaces will be constantly looking at what you're doing, and then you schedule the process of doing moves. Mm-hmm. So you don't do the move all the time. You actually schedule it.
Okay.
And I mean, we're not done yet. Right, so I was talking to the spaces guy, and they were saying, "Yeah, we're still tweaking that to see how frequently and all that." But yeah, but basic is we track heat, and then at some point we make moves.
And just also to be perfectly clear, will this feature be available as something people can try out during the release preview? It's not going to be held back or anything like that you're aware of.
It's there.
People can use it.
The goal of the preview is
to get feedback.
To get feedback.
Absolutely.
So it's got to be there. So everything we've been talking about is in the preview.
Okay, fantastic. And in case you're just joining us now, the preview is going to be available around the build time frame, 26th of June, 20th of June, sometime in there. Again, stay tuned to the build blog and other information about the exact dates when it goes. And I can't wait either because I want to get access to the bits too. So I'm waiting like you guys are for these bits because people are talking a lot. It is very hot stuff.
It's now, good. I've been playing with it. I can guarantee you it's good stuff.
Oh, man. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Not to tease you or anything.
engineering group. now, we had an event last night at the Ask the Experts where basically people can come by and basically sit down and chat with you and ask you some questions. I'm curious, could you share a little bit about some of the thread of conversation that was happening? What was the trend people were asking about? Just what would you say?
There were all kinds of conversations, but the most interesting ones are the ones that come to us and say, okay, is that really real?
Those demos weren't just like flash animations.
Because we did a demo on Monday, right, where we did very high throughput, like 600,000 IOs per second coming from a mirrored storage space. And some folks are saying, really, you're doing that? Is that like a fake thing that you're just simulating? No. This is actually a workload running here, talking over the wire to this machine over here with actual disks running the actual build we're talking about, right? I said, okay, 600,000, yes. And this thing you did with 1 million IOPS from cache, is that a, no, that's actually, so that's a huge machine. And no, this is a Romley two-socket machine, the kind of machine that you actually use.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, okay. So there was a lot of this sinking in kind of thing. I said, yes, you need to get the right gear in place and discuss. And then there are some guys that are really smart, come over and say, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm trying to do SAS 6 gig and do I need two channels or do I do two connectors and two JBOD?
You need architectural advice on how to design their systems.
Yeah, and in the talk we also had this thing, right, where we put a diagram of the whole set of machines you need and how the different fabrics are, and you have your 10 gig Ethernet over here, your 6 gig SAS over here, how many you need, sizing, scaling, and all that. So a lot of folks came prepared, like, okay, so I'm doing this thing. I now have 75 disks on my SAN. I want to go ahead and deploy a similar thing over here. I outgrew this thing. Maybe I want to do 100 drives. How would you do it? Right? And we had all this. And we had the storage spaces guy on the table as well.
Oh, okay.
So we bounced back and forth between file server and core storage, right? Yeah. So that was good too.
Nice. I know leading up to this, with the previous version of storage spaces and storage in general and sort of stuff, the options that I saw when you did the storage tiering was that it was basically going to be simple or it was going to be mirrored, mm-hmm. And as the option. One of the questions that came up again is, are we doing parity with tiering, or just on
to be clear, right? We can do simple, which is like no protection.
Right.
We can do mirror with everything gets written in two places. Yep. Right? And we have parity, which is you have something written here, and then you have some additional information just to recover.
Yeah.
Not a full copy. Right. So we had all three in 2012. Mm-hmm. The thing, you couldn't use parity in a cluster environment.
Okay.
So in the cluster, you only did simple and mirror.
Right.
And honestly, simple has no protection.
Right.
So pretty much everyone did mirror.
So
mirror is it, right? So in R2, we are also doing parity on clusters.
Okay.
Right? And we are also talking about doing double mirror and triple mirrors.
Okay.
So you can have three copies of the data, and you can take a double fit.
Right, so three-way mirroring.
Yeah, so you can do that too. Now, in essence, these are things that we were capable of doing. We're exposing in a way in a cluster environment now with R2, and that's all very good. But honestly, I would still go for mirror every time.
Okay.
Because mirror has this thing, right, that when you're reading, you actually can read from either copy. So you actually get a bonus performance.
So it's like parallel I/O, basically.
Exactly.
You can go off. I think we had Jeffrey Snover talking about that on Monday. He was very interested with the rebuilding process in parallel to be able to recover a disk faster and that sort of stuff.
Well, that's what
but also
that's what parity. In parity, right. When you lose a disk, you can now do a more efficient rebuild
right.
from parity. But what I'm talking about is for mirror. Many people think that, oh, you're doing mirror, so that means that you have two copies for safety. Mm-hmm. Right, but you also have two copies
for speed
because you can read from both.
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're intelligent and they'll do it. So that's an important piece. So I always recommend mirror. As back in the SAN environment, I would always recommend RAID 10 for performance as opposed to RAID 5.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, if you're performance minded, you don't want, and you never do simple
right.
or RAID 0 because you want protection, right?
Right.
We're all about...
Yeah, you definitely want protection.
No data loss, continuous availability, yeah. All that.
So. Absolutely. Now, we have a question from Bjorn Hubin, who's asking about if there's any way that you can let them know how to actually find the value for the disk RPM. Is that something you can query with a PowerShell?
Yeah,
or is
yeah.
that something you can basically look it up in a property tab or something
do
like that?
Do get physical disk
yeah.
and pipe that to SelectStar, and you'll see all the properties of the disk.
Oh, yeah.
You'll get the...
Get-physical disk, and then select the disk you're looking for.
And look at all the properties.
Right.
You'll see like the serial number of the disk, the
okay.
model number, and one of the things there is the speed
okay.
of the disk.
So more than likely he's looking for some kind of programmatic way of determining that. So
yeah,
there you go, Bjorn. Thank you very much for your question.
PowerShell, WMI too.
Yeah, so, that's yeah. true. That's true. Now, storage, you know, we're only talking about tiering right now. I'm assuming that storage is more than just the one-trick pony of the tiering. What would you say now? I always put all my guests under the same kind of a question. I'm making you into the, you're the proud papa of storage in the storage group. If you only could pick three things only, what would be your top three without counting tiering, because we've talked about tiering?
Okay, so...
And then if we had more time, we'll talk about more stuff, but just pick three.
One is the changes we're doing to SMB Direct
okay.
to make it perform better.
Yep.
So we're doing a lot of things to do small I/O in a much faster way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's kind of funny when we describe this. So we, for these high-speed NICs, like 40 gig,
yep.
56 gig NICs, we could do only 300,000 IOs per second at 8K.
Only 300, come on.
And most
man.
People stop Jeez. Me right there and say, you know what, just stop. Right? But I said, no, but we could do more. I mean,
yeah.
these NICs are really fast, right? So we're now getting to 450,000 mm-hmm. per port.
Wow.
And we did a demo with 1 million, right? Combining, because we can do multi-channel on top of SMB Direct as well.
Right,
so
right,
we can
right.
do multiple NICs at the same time, aggregate and all that. That would have to be in the list,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's just nice. And that also helps with the migration stuff that we're doing, which uses SMB Direct. So all that,
right.
you kind of goes there. The other thing we're doing is on the scale-out piece, we're now doing scale-out in a way, because I have to go back to 2012 and explain. When we were doing scale out before, if you had 100 clients, each one of the clients picks a node in the file server cluster
right.
to talk to.
Right.
But they won't talk to any other node. They kind of pick, oh, there are four nodes, I will talk to one. The other guy comes in, oh, I'll go with you. The other guy comes in. So each client
it's
picks
almost like a round robin or something. Just
it
picking
is.
One of them.
It is
like
literally
nice,
a round robin on okay. DNS yeah. based on the distributed name. But what we did now, especially when you're working with Spaces, right, it's important to, because on Spaces, one of the nodes owns the space. Mm-hmm. So it has a better access to that. So what we did now, first of all, if you have multiple spaces, we will naturally spread across the nodes.
Okay.
So you never have one node that has all the spaces and the other ones are just kind of waiting.
Waiting for the connection. Okay.
We spread them across. And now we are doing now per share redirection. So when the node comes in, it's trying to access a share. Say, who's the best node for that share? And then we go there.
Oh.
In a single node, my demo on the session on Monday was, I had six spaces and six shares mm-hmm. on two nodes.
Yep.
And then first, what you note is three here, three there. Then I have a single client that is accessing all six shares. Then you start to see all the traffic going to the different shares hitting mm-hmm. both nodes at the same time, right? Which we just couldn't do in 2012. Now,
wow.
on top of that, we're making that dynamic. So what I did, we had two nodes of 3-3, then during the demo, I add another node, right? And then naturally, two volumes move to that node of the two shares, and while the workload is running, the clients start using the third node as well.
So not only do you move the workload over the shares, the content, over for primary owner to increase the optimization on that guy, you're also redirecting existing clients over to there. And the impact on the workload that the clients are running, is there an impact on them while these things are moving around?
Yeah, so what we're doing, we have more horsepower on the storage side.
Right.
So you can rebalance better.
Yeah.
Right? And just to finish the demo, I then went ahead and removed one of the nodes and we saw them move back.
Right.
It's funny how now transparent failover is just like not even mentioned anymore. So
yeah.
We were talking here, we moved there, we moved back, we remove a node, add a node, all this with the workload running, right? Mm-hmm. People don't even talk about transparent failover anymore. It's like it's a given. It's just now the smart rebalancing,
right?
Which includes transparent failover, but it's like now it's a fact of life.
Okay.
Now it's the expectation that you never go down.
So how do you answer the question if someone comes up to you at the conference or at the expert night, that sort of stuff, and they say, so I've got this existing investment in technology.
Mm-hmm.
Do they continue to use it? Do they replace it? Do they swap it out? What do you suggest to someone if they come down to the table saying, man,
someone,
I just had this new project.
Right after my talk, they came to me and said, you know what? I have this iSCSI-based solution. Should I move? Right? And I was like, wait. You have an iSCSI solution. Okay. And is that working for you? And so, yeah, we got it. It's working. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a performance issue or you... overcapacity or something? No, it's fine. Then keep using, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we fully support iSCSI fiber channel, directly attached, RAID controllers. I mean, there's a whole number of things that you can do, and these are all nice and very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're coming fresh to this and you have nothing deployed, you're trying to find the optimal way to do it, we think that for the lowest operational and acquisition cost, this solution with Spaces and shared JBODs is really nice.
So, scale-up file servers, just a bunch of disks inside mm-hmm. enclosures, connected up with a variety of medium into the servers, multipath yeah. for redundancy and that sort of stuff. If
yeah.
you want to have architecture it that way, and you simply add more trays of JBODs
yes,
as you
could.
Need to for more space.
And the idea is you have file servers. That in the back they talk SAS to the JBODs.
Right.
In the front they talk Ethernet or InfiniBand to the Hyper-V host.
Right.
So there's a kind of a three-layer thing going on.
Right.
And you've
automatically separated your storage network from your virtualization connection.
Yeah. There's a SAS fabric in the back.
Right.
There's your Ethernet or InfiniBand fabric in front, and you just have to make sure that you're making things balanced. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put a whole lot, so say you put four SAS HBAs in the back, right, with 24 gigabits a second per interface.
Right.
And a lot of things over here. And then on the front, you put like 2 1-gigabit Ethernet NICs, that's not going to fly.
You right? can team them for redundancy purposes, but
that's two, just two.
you need. It's like you got the ocean on one side, you got a straw on the other side. You're trying to get through to the ocean.
So you do have to balance things out. Okay. So the idea is you have your SAS back end and your front end here, and you have to equalize them. Typically, mm-hmm. CPU and memory are not a big bottleneck,
right?
Because we proved that a single 2-socket server can do a million.
Right.
IOs per second if you have the right gear on either side. Right?
So from a JBOD enclosure and a SAS connection that's in there, and being able to control that within Server 2012 and Server 2012 R2, do we have to worry about certain versions, certain implementations, stuff getting in the way, special drivers?
Oh, absolutely. As with anything that we want to deploy, we want to make sure that these stuff is properly verified, certified. Mm-hmm. So we have you already know the list of devices that we have.
Validation program and some
stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. So we have a validation program that's out there, and we have the JBODs that we have tested and that have been proven to work. There's something called SCSI enclosure services. Mm-hmm. You absolutely want to do, because you want to have that ability to say, oh, I want to blink this drive that's giving me trouble.
Oh, okay.
So you have to do that. And Spaces has a PowerShell command that says blink drive.
Okay.
So if you don't have the right services in the JBOD,
then it can't talk down on the proper level and stuff.
You don't want to be missing that.
Right. So. Now, you mentioned something at the very beginning of this talk that was important about stuff, which was something we haven't talked about just yet, which is shared VHDX.
Ooh,
shared
yes.
files. So
that's
talk a little bit about that. We've got a couple of minutes.
So,
we have a couple of questions in the queue I want to ask too. So how about you spend a couple of minutes just about this concept of shared VHDX?
Yes, absolutely. So this is something that's interesting. We're essentially going over everything that we need that comes from the block world, that we make sure that we have it on the file world, we can do it with store spaces.
Okay.
One of the things that people do a lot is guest clustering. Now, guest clustering today, people do iSCSI to the guest, or they do fiber channel, right? Virtual fiber channels, mm-hmm. which are excellent if you are using iSCSI or fiber channel. But what if you're not? What if you're doing just CSVs on top of spaces? What if you're using Hyper-V over SMB? So in that case, we wanted to find a nice way to expose storage to the guest so you could do clustering. In the most straightforward way that we could find was to simply have two VMs access the same VHDX file. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, they have to boot from their dedicated OS disks.
Right.
Right. But then for the data, they can use a set of shared VHDX files, and you can create a guest cluster. And the guests see shared SAS.
Oh, okay.
So I like to compare that to, have you seen that movie Inception?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a dream within
dream
a dream.
Within a dream within
so
a dream.
It's a virtualized cluster inside
it's the
virtualized
storage inception.
Yeah. But in any case, so we're talking about this. And actually, we have a talk today at 5 about going deeper into this, how to configure and all that, which is very nice.
Shared VHDX. And again,
it's a new capability. It works with all kinds of storage. It works with iSCSI fiber channel. It will help you actually do something that doesn't require you to be married to a specific technology.
Yeah.
You can make guest clustering that today is on fiber channel, you want to go to iSCSI, you can mm-hmm. do it in the very same way, and then in Spaces in the same way, and SMB in the same way. So it's very cool stuff.
Very, very neat stuff. We have a question up there, and I think you actually have a session on this maybe tomorrow, with any advice on upgrading a space from Windows Server 2012 to Windows Server 2012 R2?
Yes, so we can definitely do that. So if you're doing like a standalone configuration, mm-hmm. you can just upgrade, and there is a commandlet to move up to the new capabilities.
Okay.
It's a one-way thing. So you go, you can't come back. So be careful when you do. If it's a cluster, we have something it's called the copy cluster role wizard.
Okay.
And we're going to have a talk about this later today. And the idea is that we're going to go over some of the different methods. So you can do a live migration, but you need more storage to kind of have side by side and copy over.
Yep.
Or you can do some more interesting things. If you can take some downtime, you can do a copy cluster role and not move anything, just kind of move the JBODs from one side to the other and do something. So we're going to cover all those options. There's a talk today about that. There's the two talks I'm working on today.
So great. Again, these talks are going to be available, if you're not here in person at TechEd, they are available online within 24 to 48 hours of them taking place. and they're free for anyone to go off and download, or they can watch them live, or they can, sorry, they can't watch them live unless they're here, but they can download them, they can watch them offline is what I tried to say, okay. Or they can stream them directly off the site. That'll be available in not too distant future from now. There's a whole bunch, I mean, how many talks are you guys doing on storage?
There's a lot. So we had the Hyperview SMB on Monday. Right. We have these two today, one on upgrade, one on the shared VHDs.
Right.
And we have one tomorrow that's going to be a big overview of storage.
Right. We actually streamed the Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V storage performance talk.
Yes.
That was on this morning, first thing mm-hmm. in the morning. So that one there streamed live just before this interview here. Take a look at this one here. Another question from the online world.
Okay.
How can you use, this is from Jack Hills, how can you use the same namespace across multiple scaled out SMB file server clusters?
No, so you, access it? Each scale out cluster has its own name.
Right, because when you make it, you say, okay, here's the cluster, is the name. And you say, create scale out file server.
Exactly.
And it's a share.
Now, what you want, if you want to actually be free to move across of those, what we typically recommend is that you use storage live migration.
Right.
In theory, you can go and create a DFS namespace mm-hmm. that points to these multiple scale out file servers
right.
to make them look like a single one. But I don't see many people doing that because in the end, when you're moving things around, you really can't treat them as part of the same a cluster. So mm-hmm. typically what we talk about is having the flexibility to move around, which you do have. If you are set on creating a single namespace that points to all your scale-out, meaning you have multiple scale-out file servers, you can definitely create a DFS namespace and point to it. But the benefits there are not, they don't really become a single unit, mm-hmm. it's just pointers.
Right.
But you can do that if you want.
And the scale-out file server is designed primarily for workloads. It's not really designed as an optimal solution for individual information worker office documents and stuff like that, right?
Yes, the scale-out file server is more designed for server workloads like Hyper-V or SQL.
Hyper-V or SQL and stuff like that.
Yeah, and we still have the traditional file server cluster, the one that we use for home folders and all that. And there you have DFS namespaces as well. You have DFS replication, which we increased dramatically mm-hmm. in terms of capabilities scale in this R2 release. So that's another one that you have to take a look at if you're doing home folders, right?
There's a great question up here from iHeartPS, iHeart PowerShell. Can we use our SAN-based iSCSI LUNs on the hosts with SAS-attached SSDs for storage tiering? So basically, can I mix and match the drives in my pool?
No. That's an important thing. When you're doing the storage spaces piece, which is where you get the tiering.
You have to make a new pool and add the disks into the pool.
So you have to be using shared SAS.
Okay.
So in a cluster environment.
Okay.
Right? So that is a requirement. You can't do, like, I have a SAN and then I expose the LUN and then I do spaces on top of the LUN on the SAN, be it iSCSI or FiberChannel, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of complication because there are too many variations there mm-hmm. and we have to test all this stuff to make it supported.
Right.
So the supported configuration is, in a cluster environment, you need a shared SAS disks to be able to do this. So it has to be shared SAS. It cannot be iSCSI or FiberChannel. Okay. And that's the requirement that the storage spaces team put in place.
We have another question up there from Thomas Valier, who's saying, can we expect performance improvements on the parity side of things with the R2 release?
Has there been improvements upon the parity side? We have the write-back cache.
Okay, write-back cache is there.
That is new in spaces, which is for all kinds of, it's not just parity.
Right.
And the rebuild times are dramatically better. Mm-hmm. So the problem here is you have a parity space, you lose a disk, so you need to rebuild.
Right.
So we're now doing parallel rebuild, so that's a huge performance improvement that's specific to parity.
Okay.
So that's definitely there.
Okay. I think you already answered this one here with Bill Weathers. Can storage spaces manage the JBOD as well? You were talking about,
Absolutely, it can, provided it is all part of the... That's exactly what we're targeting.
Right.
That is the scenario.
You don't want to have the requirement to go and jump out to a different admin tool. Basically, it's all built in, it's all managed in one holistic environment.
And I'll go one better than that. Now, we don't have to use, we can use Server Manager. That's a fine way to do it. You can use PowerShell.
Yep.
But some folks will now enjoy the ability to manage spaces from VMM.
Right.
Which is new in VMM 2 and Shroud R2. So you can now bare metal provision a file server.
Yeah.
You can create your pools. You can create your file share from a pool. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole set of new management abilities there straight from VMM.
Nice.
So that's new in R2 as well.
Got it. Well, Jose, we got about 30 seconds left. Any closing thoughts just before we throw it back over to our next session that's coming up on Taste of Tech Ed? Anything? Any words of advice?
Well, I think what we're talking about here is this vision, right? That we have a compute layer, a storage layer, shared storage in the back with JBODs. And the advice is try it out, right? Because there's some folks that come to me and say, oh, I think I like this stuff. This is too good to be true. There's nothing better than to just put your hands on it. Grab a JBOD, could be a small one, grab a 12 drive one, put a few disks in, get some SSDs, play with it, build a file server, let me know what you think.
Right? Nice.
So that's, you have to do it anyway.
Yeah. Right?
You have to do your testing, your proof of concept, your pilots. So that's a great time to start.
Actually, it's a good question actually, that's, when people go off and download the release preview, how do they provide feedback to you guys? Is it collected automatically through telemetry information? Is it something they can go to forums and contribute to? Like, what's the best way if they do have feedback to you guys to be able to do it?
Well, there are many, many avenues that we use.
Yeah.
The two you mentioned are fine.
Right.
We're also going to be blogging about this, and there's a feedback channel there as well. Right. So keep in contact with us. We love to see it. The forums are a great way to go do it, and also interact with the community through the blogs. I think that's also great stuff.
Okay, so just in case people are not familiar with your blog, do you know your blog URL you can share specifically?
Sure.
I know, because you're an active online, so I love getting your tweets about storage
stuff.
So I have
my vanity URL, so http://smb3.info.
Nice.
SMB, the number 3, dot info.
That's great, it. And that's where you primarily hang out for your blogging activities and that sort
yes.
of stuff.
Yes, and we're going to start
spaces?
Soon.
Yeah.
And we also link to the other folks that do spaces.
There's great.
A good blog on spaces, on storage server. There was FileCab as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're all good. And now we have this blogging infrastructure that you have these pull downs on top that you can see all the similar related blogs.
The server and tools cloud.
Yeah. So once you get to one of them, finding the other ones is very easy.
Very, very quick. Very, very awesome.
So very good.
Great stuff.
And the clustering, too. There's a very good clustering.
On the clustering side?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, we have one last question here that I'm going to get to be able to answer. We're going to get one of those fantastic All Blacks jerseys from the All Blacks. This is a modified one because I did speaking at Tech Ed New Zealand. My speaker shirt was too small, so I cut the logo out and I sewed it on as a patch
nice.
On the All Blacks. But go All Blacks. We're all set. With that, I'm going to be able to pass it back off. Jose, thank you very much again for taking the time to come down.
It's a pleasure.
And again, all of Jose's session and the rest of the storage group sessions are going to be available online, on demand, all sorts of stuff. Coming up next, we've got configuring and tuning Windows 8 as the next live session we're going to be streaming. And the Taste of Tech Ed, and we'll be back on Channel 9 at the next break. See you around.
See you.
fantastic.